Blog Talk Radio.
To the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water, going to give you sports for the next 90 minutes. It's called Overtime. Just wrapped up our show on our YouTube channel, and it's called The First 40. How you doing, Ice?
What's up, man?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, bro.
Good, 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 man. Any overlapping topics that you want to bring from the First 40 to our show?
Not really. We'll talk about some other things. I think you had a nice little list for us to go through, unless you had something. I think I'm good to continue to moving forward. And plus, too, if they want to catch what was hot on the first 40, you should go back and watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And find out the three things that I gave for advice for Jameis Winston about them New Orleans women. But anyway, instead of going to the NFL draft, because we talked about that in the First 40 a little bit, I want to go to some of the other stories in the NFL. A few people are getting in trouble, even though we're supposed to stay home and quarantine and try to work out virtually and all that other stuff. There are two NFL players, one former one. But Chiefs cornerback Bashaud Breeland was arrested on multiple charges in South Carolina, five counts, which include resisting arrest, transport of alcohol in a motor vehicle with a broken seal and open container, possession of 28 grams of marijuana, possession of 10 grams of hash, and driving without a license. And it seems like, Ice, that the Kansas City Chiefs are kind of turning into the old Cincinnati Bengals, because the Cincinnati Bengals used to have a blotter sheet arm long. And now it seems like Kansas City with Tariq Hill and the running back, the former running back they had, and they seem to be getting into trouble. What do you think about Mr. Breeland and will this be the end of his career at Kansas City for all these charges?
Well, all I know is that must have been one hell of a party he was going to. Or
yeah,
otherwise, it was one hell of a party, or he was trying to put some things together to tide him over for the virus containment or something to that effect. But no, I don't know. It's really sad because the guy probably just got just received his Super Bowl ring, and you know, winning and a lot of fame can do a lot to people. I just don't get it. I mean, maybe him being cooped up the way that he was, that to me, and I'm not saying that you should do anything, you should break any laws, but that just seems straight out reckless to me. It seems very reckless. And you named a number of things that he just had wrong. So you're an open invitation to be cited or charged or pulled over. So at some point, so when you're reckless like that, it's kind of hard to have any type of comfort, feel some kind of way about him. And his career may be over because, I mean, it's not like he's a superstar. So I don't know. And I think it really depends on what Kansas City really needs. They are the defending champions. And if they can find somebody maybe even younger that can do the job as well, then it might be a wrap for him because nobody wants to put up with that. I mean, think about what you just said. How much did you say he was carrying in his car in regards to the hash?
He's carrying his possession, 28 grams of marijuana, 10 grams mm-hmm. of hash, driving
yeah, I mean,
without a license.
Yeah, he just looking for trouble.
Yeah.
And he probably was,
I mean, when
up,
I first,
he was probably swerving.
I was wondering if he was under the influence when they caught him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He had to be. I mean, you just because why would they stop you if you doing your buying your business unless there was something that you have a broken tail light or something where you were driving recklessly or you were driving you seemed like you were scared. They had to have a reason to stop you. But then you could say they stopped him because of his skin color, but that'd be over the top. He was a. Go ahead.
You can't even come up with that with this.
I know, but when you get stopped, he's like, "Oh yeah, he's trying to stop another brother." But when you're reckless like that, then you should expect to be stopped. I'm sorry, you should be. If you don't think if you're trying to do something illegal, not saying you should anyway, but if you're going to do something, and he's like, it's almost as if he didn't care. If you had that attitude,
right.
Then it is what it is.
I think when you are famous or a celebrity or you're an athlete, you think you're above the law at some particular time. But when I first read this story, I felt like he wanted to get caught, you know, because you're a black man driving probably an expensive car and, you know, you don't have a license, you're carrying weed or, as we say, riding dirty, and, you know, you got hash, you got alcohol that's out. Broken seal in open containers of alcohol. I mean, then you're resisting arrest, thinking, okay, do you know who I am? kind of deal. He's like, yeah, you the guy that we just caught with all this stuff in his car, and you're going to jail. We don't care if you play for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's almost like he, you know, an intervention needs to happen. If he's having problems with this or if this kind of surfaces as a problem to him. Because this sounds like somebody who can't help themselves. And it got to a point where they hit a brick wall or they hit, you know, they hit the ground. And there's nowhere else but to go up. So I'm wondering if they're going to do any drug testing with him. I'm pretty sure they're going to do that. I know the league is probably going to do that. And I think this may be it for him. With all this stuff, it's almost like, you know, what are you going to do? Use this, or are you going to sell it, or did you, you know, what are you going to do with it? And so there are a lot of things that they can come up with and charge him with to kind of wrap him up in the court system where it hurts his NFL career. When I first read it, I'm like, maybe this guy wanted to get caught because there's no way that you do all this stuff and thinking that if you got stopped because. If I was holding all this stuff, I'm like, well, I probably need to get somebody else that is not under the influence, or I probably need to figure out some kind of way to do this because I don't have a license, and I get pulled over the first thing they're going to say is, where's your license and registration? You don't got that, you're done right there. No matter what kind of car you got, no matter who you are, not supposed to be driving without a license. So he can't kick the racial issue thing, you know, in South Carolina. And South Carolina is not one of my favorite places. I think it's the most racist of all the states that I've ever been in. South Carolina, Mississippi, has got to be some of the – as a black man, you know that folks are out there and they're looking to get you, especially if you're driving a nice car. Especially, and in South Carolina, and my mama's people are from South Carolina, so you know that's one of the places that I never wanted to go back to. Every time I had to drive through it, I made sure I got enough gas to from the state line in North Carolina all the way through. That I did not stop in South Carolina because it's one of those places where, to me, you know, you could pick any place in the USA and it could be. You know, you could be racially profiled or stopped for no reason. But in South Carolina, Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, you know, there's certain places that, you know that, you know, it's not going to be good if you put yourself out there. And they're going to make an example. Trust me, they're going to make an example of him with this incident, especially in South Carolina, especially in South Carolina. Any other thoughts about this?
Yeah, it is just, like you said, just very reckless on his part, and to believe is that somebody knows who you are. I mean, you could be a top-notch star, and people could just be wanting to take you down. And, again, with the reckless abandon that he portrayed, it's almost as if he was either going to a party, he was going to colleges are closed, so I don't see that happening. Wherever he was going, it just seems like he just didn't give a damn. And when you have that type of attitude, you really can't blame anybody but yourself. And to be, I mean, I never understood that. Maybe you don't think to be high and to be in possession of several narcotics, trying to get away with something, and no license. Damn, you didn't have a license.
Yeah.
Maybe with a license, you might seem as if, you might appear as if you are within the law, but you have a license. No, I don't know, like, what? Yeah, I play for the Chiefs. We just won the Super Bowl. What the hell does that mean in South Carolina?
Yeah.
You're not with the Gamecocks. We ain't rolling with you. That's sad, man. It's not funny, but it's sad because some people think they're above the law and this career could be over. You said an intervention. Yeah, he needs an intervention, all right. I tell you what, he bring in his mom, if she's still alive, or somebody he's taking care of. Bring in whoever he's taking care of and tell them that they're going to be cut off because of his pettiness. You get a real intervention. And boy, what? I can't get my hair done no more. What? Stuff was cut off.
He did everything to get arrested. if you had a checklist, things not to do when you get stopped by the police, or he did everything in the checklist to get arrested. So I'm thinking that this is what he wanted. This is what's going to stop him for whatever he's into. This is the bottom line right here. This is going to stop him. Hopefully he gets some help. The other player, former Jaguars linebacker Telvin Smith, was arrested for unlawful sexual activities with minors, not just one minor, but minors. And so this can't end well at all, Ice.
Every time I hear something like that, it makes me cringe. It just makes me cringe because it's like you have money now. You have things going on which is now in your life. You supposedly are successful. And here you go putting yourself in a position to do that. And then, of course, nobody's asking for IDs usually. They're just excited that somebody might want to hang out with them, which is the wrong answer. But when you're young, I don't understand that part too. But, shucks, it cannot, as you mentioned, it cannot end well. When you're talking about dealing with minors in any type of capacity, and you're a grown man, I don't care what you may not consider to be super grown, but just really tragic because minors, that's all we can say. You were messing around looking to hang out with babies, and no one really takes they don't take well with that. They don't like that. So I don't know. I shake my head. This is another one. I'm shaking my head right now.
Yeah, yeah. Because I can't really see this at all, but I emphasize minors because that, to me, when I read it, really kind of implies this is a predator. This is a pattern. It wasn't just one. It was minors. So it really kind of makes me think that how they're spinning this, it could be true or not true, but it seems like there's a pattern here where you're dealing with a pedophile. Now you're pretty much done. You're going to do some jail time over this. You're going to do jail time over this. They had an article, they had pictures of his mansion and how they had to go in, a SWAT team to go in and get him. So, you know, they felt, I guess the police felt that they needed to come in with, you know, all the guns blazing to get this guy out of his own mansion. And usually I was reading another article doing some research is that actually SWAT teams really aren't needed in police forces, but they use them in special situations. But they usually go overkill with the SWAT teams. And so to come after one man, there might have been some evidence that might be coming down the pike that, you know, might be coming out on Telvin Smith about a pattern that he's doing this. Because when I was reading it and I was typing it out for our topics, I wanted to make sure that, you know, are they saying a minor or are they saying they said with minors? And so, you know, if there's a history pattern going after your computer, hard drive, all this stuff, whether or not you're doing, you know, doing searches on kids and all that other stuff, this dude is done. All implications kind of point to that he is done and he's going to do some serious jail time. And if and when he comes out, he has a label on him where he can't be around schools. He can't be around any place that has a gathering of children. And so you got to wear that around your neck like, you know, an albatross. So it's really sad that, you know, I always said this, Ice, and I truly believe it. Some of these guys that play sports need sports to keep them away from trouble like this because idle time, they have idle time they don't know what to do with, and they have money. And they have this attitude that they can do anything they want, usually leads to something really bad. And we hear this in the off season with football players especially. Some of these guys are so big that I remember meeting some guys that played football in a camp I used to be a part of. And I remember joking with a guy saying, man, they don't make muscles like that unless you're in prison. Because these guys are so yoked. And, you know, what else are they going to do but play football? You know, because they're so big and massive, and they have that aggression I remember telling them, thank God you're on a football field, because I can't imagine you just walking around society like this. I just can't. And we were joking, but I was kind of serious and joking too, because you see these guys, they're massive beings. So what else do they do? Do they become prison guards? I mean, and so sometimes I always say this to folks that are going into celebrity, trouble seems, and my grandmother used to always say, trouble will find you. So you have to be careful on how you step. Trouble will find you, especially if you have money, you have some type of celebrity, people want to be involved with you, and necessarily not good people. And also money kind of really kind of emphasize some of your character flaws. So if you do have this problem of messing with minors, the money and your access just gives you more of a kind of a way of doing it and where you can hide it a little bit, you know, you're out there doing it. Let's look at R. Kelly, for instance, and the situation he's in. Any other thoughts on this, bro?
Yeah, it's just like you said, I think, too, that's where it helps to have people that are well-grounded and some people that's really in your corner from day one. Like, for instance, if you have a brother or cousin or somebody that really cares about you and doesn't care about the money, I mean, it's cool to have and hang around, but they were with you. They're going to be with you no matter what, and they're going to be somebody that's going to really kind of set you straight. Then I think that's what's missing. But again, some guys just think that they on top of the world, and then they start taking care of a bunch of people in their family, then they do feel like they're kingpins, and they can't be touched, and that's just really sad, because for as great and big as they may think they are, then it can be snatched away just that quick.
Yeah. Before I get to the next story in the NFL, I don't know if you watched this videotape that I posted up on our page, the Goon Squad Sports radio show, and it's an ex-mob guy who explained how the NFL has been rigged since the 1980s. And first of all, I'm going to ask you if you saw the video.
No, I did not. I did not. I thought about it. Then again, I did not watch it because of the fact that I've heard that before. I've heard that from a couple people. But go ahead.
In the video, he's on a Mike Tyson's show. Mike Tyson has a podcast. And in the video, he was saying, you know, this guy, Compo, he was saying how easy it was back in the day, how what happens is that, you know, sometimes athletes love to gamble. And sometimes they go overboard because they can gamble at high stakes. And so sometimes these guys gamble so much that they can't pay. So they call over another guy who is running things in maybe a casino or something like that, or a high-stakes poker game or something like that. And the player goes and talks to the head guy. And the guy is, you know, the player is like, you know, oh, my God, you know, I'll have the money. Maybe his check didn't come from the last, you know, week's game. I'll have the money. He's like, listen, don't have the money, don't worry about it. But here's what we want you to do. I want you to throw the football to guys wearing the other uniform in your next game, you know, just the two or three times. And so the guys were on the show asking, he's like, does he do it? He said, yeah, because he's in real deep money for us. So in order for you to get out of this debt, you're going to have to do something for us where we can recoup that money. And so it led me to believe that this is probably not in just the NFL also, but we used to talk about James Harden and how he would get in the playoff games and then act like he didn't know how to play basketball in crucial games, seven games or the sixth game where it's a deciding game. He couldn't shoot. He couldn't dribble. It was almost like he was, you know, he couldn't function in those games. And so I hope folks who are listening to the show could get to see that video. It's on our page. But when he talks about this, you know, to me it made a lot of sense about you're seeing people who are all on top of their game, and then all of a sudden in key games and key moments, they make crucial mistakes, and you go, what was he thinking? Where was he throwing the ball? The guy, he wasn't even throwing it to his player. It was almost like he threw it straight to the other team. Your thoughts on that, bro?
Well, I'm gonna say this. I know how you got. I'm trying to tap dance lightly around this. I know how you have a taste.
Conspiracy.
Yes. I was just gonna say that. So, and that's okay though. You know, you have the right to think that way. But I can see. I would say I think that I can see that happening. Maybe some, but not all the way. That's just. I don't see how everybody does it, because then it would be a problem, because if they did that a lot more often, then you would see guys, there would be a call for investigation, and it would cause too many people to pay attention to it, and that's not something they want to do. Not saying it doesn't happen. It was kind of like Donahue, the former referee for the NBA, was saying that there was a lot of that kind of way, too. I can see certain things, too, and I think more than anything, referees get certain players' calls and stuff like that, too. So I won't say it doesn't happen, but to say is if it happened all the way through the 80s, because then at that point, you're going to have to show me, we're going to have to go game by game. Each Super Bowl, right? You have to do that way, you give me the buy-in. If you can say, hey, Joe Theismann was on the hook for this or whatever, then you got my attention. If somebody else does something like that, I think, though, if it's constant, then it causes an alarm, and that's not something that they want to do, because when it causes an alarm and there's an investigation, no one gets paid. The mob guys definitely don't get paid. And then they have protection, the police around the guy all the time, which they can take him out any time they want to. But still, it comes down to a lot of unnecessary publicity that they don't want. They would not have wanted back then. So I think it's a possibility, but I'm not sure how often. I would have to go back and look and see how often they're saying this is happening.
Yeah, and I don't think he said all the players. It was like certain players that love to gamble. You think about the players who love to gamble in golf. They like gambling, you know, going to Las Vegas and gambling. And that's one of the things that a lot of people were really apprehensive with, the Raiders going to Las Vegas, because now anybody that comes in town from the opposing team can go in there and get in there on a Friday or Saturday and gamble a little bit, or gamble a little bit on Sunday night, whatever night they're there, after the game or before the game. And, you know, I'm going to keep a watch while when and if the season starts about some of those teams that come into Las Vegas and the behaviors of some of these players and how they play and how they don't play and all this other stuff. Because, you know, gambling is big business, and they said the house always wins. And so,
no
I'm
doubt.
Thinking that
you stay there long enough. That's for sure.
Yep, the house always wins. And so, you know, you're lucky if you win anything in a casino, but I guarantee you lose more than you win in those casinos. And so, those folks who can't help themselves to have a gambling problem, especially if they have money to gamble and they're celebrities or athletes, then they can be compromised. That's all I'm saying. Not saying all of them, because I don't like giving away my money like that. Anytime I go to the casino, I'm spending a certain amount, and after that, I'm going to sit there and enjoy the drinks, and I'm going to have a great meal, because those casinos have, especially here in Chicago, they have great, great, great food there. Something about casinos, they have some of the best drinks and great food. So always leave some money for some great drinks and great food. But there's a limit to what I'm going to bet. And if I win, fine. And I'm going to try to take something more than I came in with. But if I lose it, that was money that I was going to lose. Maybe it would be different if I made like stacks like, you know, some of these athletes and celebrities. But I doubt it. Once I get it, I like to keep it and get the things that I enjoy. But any other things on this before we take a break and come back and talk about the draft?
Yeah, well, you mentioned something about Las Vegas, and for the longest time, it was this thing that this notion that you should not put a professional team in there because the players are going to lose their mind and they're going to go crazy and people are going to be cheating and doing all kinds of stuff. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But in this age, I'm going to say this. It don't matter where you are. If you had an issue and that problem is going to happen, seriously. I mean, no matter where you are, if you got that problem, you're going to find a way to get that in. Because with the off-seas accounts, offshore accounts, and able to be able to bet overseas now. And truth be told, they know that this gambling, this illegal gambling is coming. So certain guys are going to be compromised
mm-hmm.
anyway, but then the other people know it because it's coming. And that's one of the things I used to love about where I live in my state, because I never had to worry about gambling because I would have to go to Las Vegas to bet on sports. And the worst thing they can do for me is bring it closer to me, because I know at some point I'm probably going to indulge, not to the point where I lose my mind, but I enjoy horse racing. I enjoy other things. I mean, there's nothing like being hanging out, you know, maybe at the sports book and watching the NFL and your team's winning and you playing a game, something like that too, and just the exhilaration and the running of things and thinking about that chance that you may win. You might have a chance to win, and you're excited. It makes the game more exciting for a lot of people. But for those that don't gamble,
right.
I mean, I get that. I'm not mad at one way or the other. It's like drinking. You don't want to drink, I'm not mad at you. But Pastor Rayon. Anyway.
Yeah, because I have a buddy who he can't get excited about games unless he got money on it. And I'm like, and he's always wanting to bet me, and I'm like, no, I don't want to bet. It's like, I don't know who's on the take. I don't bet on nobody but me. So I'm not betting on somebody I don't know. I can tell you who I think's going to win, but I could be wrong. But he seriously cannot really enjoy a game unless he has money on it. And I'm sure there are a lot of people like that where they don't get excited about these sports games or what's going to happen or, the point system and who's going to win by how many points. They get excited about that. And to me, I just get excited about just the game, just watching the game and watching how it plays out. It's like a story that you see that's a new story. Each game is a new story, a new outcome. So it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see how this kind of plays out, and especially with the NBA and NFL getting into the legalized gambling thing. So we'll see. We'll take a break, and we'll come back. And before we leave the show, man, I want you to talk about the situation with horse racing, because I know you follow horse racing and some of the things that have been happening in that sport. But don't let us end this show without talking about it. We'll take a break. This is the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. Funny story about it. I forgot the lyrics to this song one time, and my buddy, who always plays practical jokes on me, wrote down the lyrics that he was at this place and he was naked to the world. He was talking about all the women he was seeing, and the lady at the end of this particular verse, there was a lady, she said something crazy, and he left it there. And I texted back, "What did she say? What did she say?" He got me good on that one. Anyway, let's talk about the NFL draft. We talked a little bit about it, but I want to go deeper into this NFL draft, bro. And I know Cincinnati, they had Joe Burrow and that number one pick. How are the people responding to him going to Cincinnati? I know Cincinnati, he's a hometown boy and lived there in Ohio. How are they reacting to that?
Well, I mean, there's people are excited because there's hope. They believe there's hope. And, excuse me, with there being hope, then something they can build upon. You have a very young coach right now, and that makes them excited. But I mean, Joe Burrow's there. Then you have to ask yourself, what happens next? They have AJ Green that they signed to a you know, far as they gave him the maximum, so they gave him, they tagged him, and I think that goes there. But I think the future is bright for them, because when you look at what they picked up, they had another wide receiver which they needed, and T. Higgins from Clemson. And they brought up picked up linebacker Logan Wilson on draft on day two. They signed one of my favorite players from Ohio State, from back in the day, former Buckeye Von Bell, to play strong safety. So there's talent there, and they can work around. So now what you're saying is, think about this from this standpoint. You have Joe Burrow, if he's your starting quarterback, or Andy Dalton, whoever's playing the quarterback position. And you have A.J. Green, you have T. Higgins, and you have Joe Mixon. And they have decent tight ends and another wide receiver. So they're not bad. It's a nice little combination along with the defense that's coming along with a young coach that really is becoming that's innovative and wants to try to win. So I think people are excited about it. And the Bengals did themselves a good service by picking quality athletes and quality players to fill in. So it'll be interesting to see how they – how they work this out with all of the talent that they have now.
Yeah, because they picked up some good defensive players. It seems like they want to beef up their defense with linebacker Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis-Gaither. They're looking at an edge in Khalid Kareem. They got another linebacker, Marcus Bailey. And so they're looking to beef up that defense. And to try to get the offense the ball back. I guess they're expecting Joe Burrow to come in there and light it up like he did at LSU. But you got to have the defense to get the ball back. And they picked up some power pack linebackers. Any of the teams, I thought, you know, I'll go first with this. This is a team that I didn't mention in the first 40, but I thought Baltimore did well in the draft. Of course, they got Patrick Queen, who's a linebacker, and they needed some defensive help, and they got that out of LSU. And LSU and Alabama, I mean, they might as well just grab their whole team in the draft, because every starter on that team, they were just scooping up. Baltimore got J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State, the running back. They also Devernay, the wide receiver out of Texas. You have a linebacker, Ohio State, Malik Harrison. You have offensive tackle to try to get Jackson some protection with Tyree Phillips. You have offensive guard with Ben Bredesen, a defensive tackle with Broderick Washington. You had also another a wide receiver and a safety, James Porter, the wide receiver from, I believe, SMU. And then you had Geno Stone from Iowa, the safety. It looked like, you know, Baltimore is kind of beefing up, and they're trying to make a team that is formidable foe for the Kansas City Chiefs coming up. Your thoughts on Baltimore and their draft picks?
Yeah, well, that's what they do, and it's almost as if the front office continues to follow the footsteps and also the knowledge of Ozzie Newsome, because Ozzie Newsome was the type of guy that would go deep and find talent or look at it a certain way nobody else would, and that allowed Baltimore to always be competitive. Of course, you think about how he was able to go back out and pick up Lamar Jackson. Well, a lot of people say he didn't have it and he wasn't a quarterback and all that other nonsense. But they went in, found him, pulled him out, using the way they wanted to now change or orchestrate their offense a certain kind of way. And as you mentioned, bringing in these players, as you mentioned earlier, certain finds, because a lot of people just don't. They know the top names, but when you grab players from top-notch programs, and they've been trained correctly, trained a certain kind of way, then they usually are, sometimes they come in ready to play. You mentioned about J.K. Dobbins, you mentioned about Patrick Queen, but a lot of people are asleep on Malik Harrison from Ohio State. He knows what that's like at linebacker, too. So they have quality players who come from big-time programs, and they're ready to be inserted. So now into the games and into their programs. So the key, as you mentioned before, is depth from that standpoint. So you look at Baltimore and what they had, even though they have two decent, actually more than decent running backs with Mark Ingram and others, and then you bring in J.K. Dobbins, he's just always bringing in firepower and next man up. So Ingram was hurt a little bit last year, but you always had that depth, and the depth is key to everything. And I think they know that when you play teams like Kansas City, who lost a couple people, but then they brought in some other guys, or they brought somebody next man step up. You bring up some older wide receivers that can step up, and that's what you need to do. You need to have that available. I think they've done that. I think that you're going to see Baltimore kind of surprise you. I think they felt for the longest time that it was their Super Bowl to lose. And sometimes experience of taking an L in the postseason gets you ready. Kansas City had to learn. And then they had opportunity, and they won it. So it's going to be very interesting. I want to see how the Ravens play out their way, how the Bengals develop, and a couple other teams to see what they do. And I know you guys mentioned before about I was kind of down on the Packers for picking up Jordan Love, and you guys said they're 13-3 and on the 40, and said that they went to the championship, but they didn't go. They didn't win. I mean, that's great to say they're 13-3. That's okay for the Bengals, right? That'd be great for the Browns, right? That'd be great for Houston. Mm-hmm. But when you are in the business of trying to win championships, that's not good. When you're expecting to win, and you say, well, we made it to the championship, that's not good enough for Green Bay. Everybody knows that. Aaron Rodgers is not on that field trying to gather trophies and saying, well, we almost made it. It's like telling Tom Brady, what you going to do? Well, if we win the division, I'll be okay. No, the hell he won't. He's a competitor. You ask Aaron Rodgers, what does he play for? He probably say either money, commercials, and winning. He wants to win. And if you don't have the right personnel, I don't care how many 13-3 seasons you have. If it's like anything else, you can do great in the off season, in the regular season, but you don't step up and show that you're capable in the postseason, you want to go to the Super Bowl. It's nonchalant. And the question too is, with everything that changes, with the same squad that they have, where they got through a lot of things, can they pull off the same thing with the same personnel? Will they be 13-3 next year with the same personnel? Jury's out on that one.
Well, yeah, let's go to them, because you just segued me right into Green Bay and looking at their draft picks. I'm thinking that Green Bay, more so than Chicago, are going to be looking in the free agent market to get some more experience receivers, other than somebody just coming out of the college ranks. And it just seems like maybe Aaron Rodgers is saying, you know what, I don't want a rookie receiver that I have to break in. Give me somebody more experienced. Maybe they're going that route. But they did pick up Jordan Love, which I think is not a bad pickup to have as a backup quarterback and the heir apparent after Rodgers finishes his career or leaves the Green Bay Packers. I don't really buy into Rodgers not you should have talked to Rodgers and you should have okayed it with him. He is not the owner of the team. It is a business. They are professionals. And so this is part of the business. They have to get depth at quarterback just in case something happens. So I think this is a good pickup for them. The other good pickup I think that they did get, they didn't get receivers. They did get a tight end from University of Cincinnati, Joshua DeGuara. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. But the pick that I didn't really like, who I thought this guy was a stud, and nobody talked about him last year, was A.J. Dillon from Boston College. He is a stud running back. And so he should really help them out. And to me, he's kind of like a Derrick Henry. So that tells me that Green Bay are not going to emphasize on just throwing the ball around and have Rodgers kind of run around and run for his life. They want to pound that football in the black and blue division. They also picked up some guys they needed on defense, Kamal Martin, who is a linebacker, and also they got some help on the offensive line. John Royan Jr. From Michigan, Jake Hansen from Oregon, a center, and Ruyon is a offensive guard, and you have an offensive tackle out of Indiana that they picked up. And so it seems like these guys, they want to kind of shore up that offensive line. They want to run the ball. They want to be able to pound the ball when they need to pound and when you need to run it in the winter. They also kind of you got some picks for defense. Jonathan Garwin from the University of Miami, Vernon Scott, who is a defensive back from TCU. So they're kind of beefing up that defense, as well as getting the offensive line that can protect Rodgers and to pound the football. Your thoughts about Green Bay and their picks?
Well, and I don't take anything away from the defense, because you can always get better that way. And I understand that it's a division where you kind of do need to ground and pound from time to time. But it comes back to when you need to make plays, you still have to do certain things. They clearly overused Aaron Jones last year. He was everything to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think from that standpoint, Aaron Jones, from the standpoint, he had, 52, he had caught 49 passes last year, a third leading receiver on that team, ahead of Marquez Valdez-Scantling, the wide receiver. Aaron Jones also ran for over 1,000 yards. So he was Mr. Everything to them. And you bring in Jamal Williams, who was playing the backup quarterback there too. But here's the thing that really catches my eye. And granted, I get it. They were 13-3, and that's how they kind of did it with ground and pound. But you overuse again Aaron Jones. But then you come back, and Devontae Adams was the leading receiver last year. He almost reached 1,000 yards in receiving. And then he had 127 targets. The next highest wide receiver with targets was Alan Lazard. He caught 52 passes for 477 yards. He only had 3 touchdowns. So I don't know. I mean, I get it. I just don't. All I'm saying is the way that these things are changing, sometimes you can get away with certain things because of injuries to players or teams just were not. And let me just say this, and I'm not making excuses for them because they made a play well anyway, but can we say that it was an off year for a lot of teams last year? A lot of things happened we didn't think were going to happen in regards to the way that we were accustomed to. So my question is, is that the new norm? And if it's not, can Green Bay still get it done that way? I just don't know that. And Aaron Rodgers, lucky when you think about the way that he played, he threw for over 4,000 yards, and he had 26 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, sacked 36 times, though. It's another big issue. 36 times, he's more than efficient. I actually had a great season, but he never it's one of those things, too. The other thing, and I'll say this last but not least, the point is they, as you said, play ball control, kept the score down, ground to pound. But when they played teams where they had to score, like they did in that NFL championship game, they couldn't get off the bus. And with more and more teams transforming themselves into speeding the game up and using more mobile quarterbacks and faster offenses, I'm not sure if that ground to pound is going to work the way that Green Bay likes to play or did play last year.
Yeah, because it worked for Tennessee, and it just seems like Green Bay is trying to be the AFC Tennessee in the NFC. You pick a team, man, and tell me about their draft picks and what you liked and what you didn't like.
The other teams that I was looking at too that I thought would did pretty well was the like I said, we said the Bengals, but I got to go with that. I know I hate to say it, but people are thinking I'm a broken record with this, but I'm good with that. Cowboys, man. Come on now. Come on. You know that. Sorry to say it, but I was happy for them, and I was excited because they made some smart decisions. When you pick up CeeDee Lamb at 17, which was a gift to me, that really helps them offensively. But then after that point, you need to look past that. So you look at picking up cornerback Trevon Diggs, who's a player, defensive tackle, Neville Gallimore, another business they need help at. In fact, both of those guys, Diggs and Gallimore, they're valued higher than they when they you know than they were selected. Then you needed an edge rusher, you bring in Brandon Lee and Nay, and then you need a center because your center is retiring or retired. You know, you bring in another center and another cornerback and a backup quarterback. So when they went out, they got the gift, and then they continued to pursue to follow right into looking at towards the issues, the places that they had issues and need to replace with quality talent. That says a lot, and that's all you want your team to do in a – you want your favorite team to do in a draft. You know, if you have opportunity, make some good quality moves and get us ready for next year or for the future. And I think they were solid in that role. And a lot of people don't want to say it because it's Dallas, because, you know, you either love them or you hate them, but I think they were solid in their picks this time. And that's not always been – that has not always been the case.
Yeah, I have to admit, I haven't seen Ben DiNucci, the quarterback from James Madison, play. But it seems like with that seventh pick, seventh round pick, and he was picked, I forget where he was picked. He was picked 17th in the seventh round. Yeah. It just seems like they're going to work out something with Dak, because if they would have picked another quarterback and not get CeeDee Lamb, that would have spelled trouble for Dak Prescott. But it seems like, hey, we're going to work this out with him. We'll figure it out, but we're going to build on the defense with the cornerback, the defensive tackle, the cornerbacks, I should say, the edge. And just in case we need it, we need a backup quarterback to back up Dak or anybody else that they put in as a starting quarterback, whether it be I'm not sure if Cam Newton is an option. I'm not sure if Dylan is an option. So it just seems like they were saying, we're not going to kind of have a controversy, but we need some playmakers on offense, because I felt like Dallas last year got the ball in scoring position sometimes, but they just couldn't punch it in. And people were keyed up on Cooper and anybody they had as receivers there, even keyed up on Zeke. So to get some more playmakers, I think that was a good call for Dallas. I'll give them kudos. Give them kudos. Another team. Pick a couple more teams, and then we'll go on to something else that you were impressed with or you didn't like.
Let's see. Let me take a look at your what your buddies. What did your boys' buddies do in the draft? Because I want you to talk about your favorite team, Chicago.
Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Chicago. You talked about it on the first 40, man. They got a couple of cornerbacks. They got some guards. They do need some offensive linemen. They got Darnell Mooney from Tulane, who's a wide receiver. He's 5'11", 175 pounds. They did get that. But they got more defensive players. But the question I had with Cole Kmet, he's a hometown guy. They got the pick from the Chargers and from Notre Dame. And so, but they had nine other tight ends on this roster. And it just didn't make it. Just this was like a busted pick to me. Now, is it because you liked him more? Are you going to let everybody else go or try to trade other people? I don't know. You just picked up, like you said in the first word. You got a tight end. Do you plan on doing a two tight end system? I don't know what's going on here. So I'm not a Bears fan, even though I wore my Sweetness hoodie today. I like certain Bears players. But you just don't get a sense of that the Bears know what they're doing, especially in the GM office. Here's the same guy I picked, Trubisky, and now they're trying to shop him around or get rid of him. You brought in another quarterback that, you know, he's not better than. So you just wonder if the ownership is going to make a change on coaches. They're going to make a change on GM first and then the coach, because if the coach co-signed for this or he doesn't have any say-so in this, this is really bad. This is really bad how you get nine tight ends on your roster currently, and you pick up another tight end in the draft. You didn't need another tight end in the draft. You could have picked somebody else, another playmaker. With all those wide receivers that were available during this pick, why would you pick this tight end?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you look at the way the stats don't lie. Last year, their number one receiver was Allen Robinson, the second. Allen Robinson, 154 targets. He had over 1,100 yards in receiving, and he had 7 touchdowns. But then when you go look at it, the second receiver was Anthony Miller. He had 85 passes, targets towards his way. He caught the ball 5 times. But why is it that Tariq Cohen, the running back, was a second the guy who received the second amount of passes thrown to him? He had 104 targets behind Allen Robinson. Anthony Miller only received the ball, had 85 targets going his way. That's insane. That is insane. And 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns here. And then when you look at their depth of their roster, it just makes you nervous. Because you mentioned was about the 9 tight ends and that wide receiver Miller, we're not sure about right now. You had Cordero Patterson, who's turned into a running back and a punt return, and they don't even throw him the ball anymore. So he shouldn't be called a running back, a wide receiver. You have Javon Wims and Jimmy Graham. I don't know. I think they might be seeing Cole really relieving Jimmy Graham a lot if he is able to make the transition early, and maybe that's what they're looking for. I don't know. And then you bring in Nick Foles, and he must really want to get out of Jacksonville real bad. Because what type of weapons do you have over in Chicago? I don't know. Maybe with the money, something makes you wonder.
Yeah. I would have even thought a running back. You need offensive power. You need offensive weapons. You're set on defense. You have one of the best defenses in the league. You need offense. You need to score the football. You need to score touchdowns, you know? And so it just didn't make sense to me. I would have picked a running back instead of this particular tight end, because if you got all those tight ends on the roster, you're going to be cutting a lot of tight ends or trying to trade them. But the way I was looking at the draft, the teams that needed tight ends, grab tight ends. They don't need your tight ends. They grab tight ends from all over the country. And so, you know, and to me, teams are going quicker. They may have 1-2 tight ends, but they're going quicker and getting possession receivers and receivers that are playmakers. People want to score. They want a mobile quarterback, and this is where the league is going. But one more team I wanted to look at is the Las Vegas Raiders. And I thought they had a great draft, even though they were showing everybody a draft board during the draft. Henry Ruggs III from Alabama is the wide receiver. It seems like the Raiders are looking for playmakers. They're looking for cornerbacks that could cover. They got another wide receiver out of Kentucky, Lynn Bowden Jr. They got another receiver let me see where he's from, South Carolina, Brian Edwards, and they got that pick from the Bears. So they got that pick in the 3rd round, 17th pick from the Bears. They picked a wide receiver. The Bears didn't pick a playmaker. They got another a safety, Tanner Muse. They got an offensive lineman. They just seem to be solidifying that defense and getting playmakers. And so what are your thoughts about the Raiders pickup in this draft?
I think they did well, as you mentioned, with Ruggs, who's major. I was surprised they didn't. I think they like Ruggs more than CeeDee Lamb because of the speed. He's a lot faster, quicker. CeeDee Lamb was a better route runner, and they want to make some explosions. So I get that as well. Then they also picked up Damon Arnett. Damon Arnett, former cornerback at Ohio State, they thought he came up a little early. He was a major player last year for the Buckeyes. And he has an attitude, and he plays the Raiders' way. So with them coming up the way that they did, I think that John Gruden and the general manager rose to the occasion, made some things happen. Like you said, you're bringing up a couple wide receivers. You're bringing about Bowden, you said, from Kentucky. You're bringing Edwards from South Carolina. Bringing a safety and Tanner Muse. So they I don't think they did bad. I think they're excited. The offensive lineman from Clemson can't go wrong in there just because of the technique and the way that they go about their business. So I think they're going to sit back. They go to the brand new stadium and kind of watch this develop right in front of you. And for all the naysayers that dog Gruden the way that I did last year, a couple years.
Yeah, I did too.
I think this is his kind of way to say, hey, guys, thumbing his nose at us. To say, hey, I told you it's going to take a little time. It's going to be a process. It's going to be pretty, but we're on our way. So kudos to them. Interesting draft, but we'll see how it plays out.
All right. That's our eye test on the NFL picks. We may pick out some more next week and look at some of the other teams and what they're going to do. I hate doing the grading, Ice, because you never know until these guys get out on the field and perform. So when they talk about, oh, we graded here, we graded there, it just seems like teams, a lot of the teams in the NFL pick their need. And maybe their need is in free agency or when people get cut or folks that they want to trade for. But I thought that these teams this year really went for need and accomplished that. But we'll take a break and we'll talk some more sports right here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. Ice, before we get to the NBA, I wanted you to talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening in horse racing, because I know you follow that, and when I need to make a bet, I ask your advice on who should win in a horse racing. So there's some kind of tragic events happening there. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the issue is they're having a lot of the horses that have been dying, actually. It's been going on for quite some time, trying to figure out why this is happening. Some people are pointing to the tracks, but they're also discussing the factor. A lot of these horses, for the longest time, have been able to be placed on certain medicines so they can still run, even though they're to mask any injuries they may be having. And now that they're forcing the owners and trainers and whatnot to kind of be legitimate and straight up, the horses are running, and they can't really figure out why these certain horses at a certain period of time are dying. But they will say this, too, that they have said that horse racing expects certain amount of horses to die, okay? It's kind of part
really?
Of it. But this is it's alarming. It's like, because it's just the nature of the beast. You're asking a large so many pound horse to run on these tracks at a high rate of speed, and then you're putting a human on top of them and asking them to run crazy speed, and everybody's not built for that. You're really asking the pounding is not, even though we might think they're beautiful horses and whatnot, all thoroughbreds are not meant to be pushed to the ground over and over for so many years. And it happens. So they know that. But the other part of it, too, they're trying to clean the sport up while so many horses are dying that a certain way makes no sense. And then with the virus situation coming on, horse racing has been forced. A lot of tracks have shut down. A lot of jockeys not riding right now. The Kentucky Derby, which normally would be happening this Saturday, has been moved. I think only the second time in quite some a number of years has been moved to September, which means the Triple Crown. This is going to be interesting, though, because the Triple Crown usually takes a week off, or they come back to back. But now I think they're going to have to push up, because if the Kentucky Derby takes place on Labor Day, then you need to get out of there before early October, because if they stay on schedule, the Breeders' Cup is in November, which is the first weekend in November, and the Breeders' Cup is $1 million races, so they're going to try to get all that in, and then turn around and come back to the Breeders' Cup. And what's interesting about this is, for the first time in a long time, you'll have the Kentucky Derby will be run in the fall, but then the Breeders' Cup is going to be in a more of a colder location. It's going to be in Kentucky this year and down in Lexington at Kingland track. And it's going to be a little different. It's going to be a little chilly and a little cold compared to being out in the lovely confines of Santa Anita or something to that effect. So a lot going on there. They just trying to hold on. But people, for as much as people, it's kind of like boxing. People say, they say horse racing is dying. They say boxing is dying. But you still have those hardcore fans that still come up and still love the sport because they want to be entertained, because there's always that next great one coming up, that next 3-year-old, next 4-year-old, or even the next 2-year-old that is down the line with great bloodlines and a great lineage that makes you go, wow, this could be the one. And everybody wants to hit that long shot. Everybody wants to hit that 50-1, a long shot. So there's always going to be, I think, that way. But right now, it's kind of like anything else. It's not as the excitement is not as high, but they're hoping that things open up so they can get back to business, because they do make people make money and they enjoy the competition that horse racing brings and the money.
I didn't realize that they expect a number of horses to die. That's kind of sad and kind of tragic. A lot of people bet on the horses. It's a popular sport, and consider horses athletes. But can you imagine, like, if we expected like some certain players in the other sports to kind of die off like that, the uproar that would be. And I'm surprised that a lot of people aren't kind of stepping up and saying this may be cruelty to animals. I don't know if that's even in consideration when you talk about horse racing. Are there groups that step up and try to protest against some of the things that happen in horse racing?
There's a number of groups out there that do that. Of course, you have the groups that come out, animal rights group doesn't think they should be racing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them stand up. But then again, with that being said, this is a lucrative business. Horse racing has been going on for a long time. I tell people all the time that if you really want to do the history, it shows you how things change. The first winners of the Kentucky Derby were African American. You don't hear about that
right. Every
once in a while. You don't hear about that. Like the first five, maybe four or five derbies, Kentucky Derbies, were African American jockeys. And then they were eliminated and moved out once they started making money in the sport. Then it changed. But the whole point of it is, it's been going on for so long. People still involved in it. There's still room for it. And it's certain times it's going to be a rich person's game. It's nothing like somebody with money to come in, or you get that story about them. They found this horse, and it really didn't cost a lot of money. Got the right trainer, and now they're rich. It's the kind of rags to riches story. So as much as people talk about, some people don't like horse racing, there are a lot of people that do. And again, with those groups that you mentioned, if they really were about it, then they wouldn't let horse racing go at all. But when the money, what they do with the money and the amount of money that they bring in, and some of the things that horse racing does to help other communities, then it just makes you wonder. And some of those people working in the stalls and whatnot are really just some great people. They're just basic folks. They're just having to be in a different kind of sport.
Okay. Talking about the NBA, it seems like every week they have a new plan on how they're going to bring the season back. And I was reading an article by Steve Kerr. He's like, yeah, just wipe the season. Wipe the season off. It's not going to happen. They're talking about bringing opening up the facilities and having no more than four players in the facility. And I'm like, oh, man, it just seems like they just want to get in the news cycle. They really don't have – it's like 20 plans out there, and we won't know until we have a vaccine or whatever. But what's your take on the NBA? They're still trying to iron out some plans on bringing the season back.
Yeah, well, like any other major sport, I mean, the only sport I think we said earlier is that definitely is going to find a way to try to play if it's capable. It's going to be the NFL because they want their money. But in regards to the NBA and even with baseball, I think that you just have to have a plan, a contingency plan to be ready to go. Because once you can't make this up as you go along. You can't go, well, all right, well, they said we're open. Now we need to hurry up and do something. No, you should have that plan in place now. So I think the way it's going to run that they're talking about is one of the plans would be to maybe play 25 games, find a way to get out 25 games, and maybe have a shorter end season and then have playoffs and get out, which I think would be kind of cool because it's like more of a quick round-robin tournament. And you have to have your team ready. And if you're not ready, you lose. And you put it on the line. I like that, then kind of drawing it out and trying to finish up the rest of the season. Nah. Limited, let them play a little bit for a couple weeks and get their feet up on them. And then let's go to work. It's time to go to playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see what they say. But, again, they cannot wait till the last minute. They need to be making those decisions about how they're going to proceed right now.
Yeah, because so much is up in the air. It just seems like they can't make – it's almost like you're trying to make a date, but so many things are up in the air that you can't because you don't have the information that will help you kind of plan what you need to plan to move forward. So it's kind of like, to me, they're still in limbo. Not going to talk about any more bad news with players getting in trouble, but we might say that the story about the Hightower, Tulane guard a little bit later, but Kawhi Leonard loses his copyright lawsuit with Nike. I remember he had this logo that he said he wrote down, and he says Nike stole it allegedly, and so he loses that lawsuit. But any of the stories that on the reality of sports that people need to look at on your page, or people should know this, that Ice does the boxing show, and I want you to talk about some of the things that on the boxing show and where they can find it.
Yeah, we do the boxing show. It's just myself, Frank Gordon, and John Raspone, and John has done a number of different things. With boxing, he's covered a lot of boxing, written a couple of dynamic books. So we just kind of go after it. And you can find that on the Ultimate Sports Network. You can find that there. We have a YouTube channel as well. But it's good to be able to get inside there and talk about boxing and talk about some things, the fights that you wanted to see or some fights that took place beforehand, kind of talk about that a little bit. And it's just all an ongoing process of saying, hey, man, remember this, or let's take a look and move forward and really give people a different kind of perspective on boxing compared to maybe some of the big boys. And we have a different take, I think. And you mentioned about some of the stories. One of the stories I wanted to look at is, of course, I want to give kudos to Shaq for covering the funeral expenses for the college football recruit from Orlando that passed away, who died. Tragically, and was headed to Louisville. I mean, those things don't get you don't hear enough about those. That was made. Also, Neil Ivey, Notre Dame's new coach of women's basketball coach, taking over. One thing that was kind of quiet, Muffet McGraw, the coach at Notre Dame, she just kind of quietly walked away. She went to a national title, and she just like just kind of whispering. And I know with all of this going on, That was interesting to me. So it was stuff like that too. And then we can also talk about the way that certain certain channel portrayed certain athletes in that regard. You look at when T. Higgins was called up for the draft by the Bengals, you know, they get to know portion. He had his hometown up there, let you know he was Mr. Basketball in the state. His sister is a nice basketball player in college. And then the other remark right below that was his mom was fought drug addiction for 16 years. What?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Yeah. Why do
why?
We need to know that?
Yeah. And well, we know that how that could affect him. Okay, that's their personal business. Why do we
yeah.
need to know that? And they come right back, and they were all over the place. You look at the Colorado receiver, said his mother survived Nile virus. What the hell? Alabama quarterback,
yeah.
father died of heart failure. Are you effing kidding me? That was the case. I'd be up there. I mean, so many people have so many tragedies in their life. I know they're looking for sensationalism, but my goodness.
Yeah, but why? Yeah. I was wondering, why do we need to know that? And can they come up with something positive about these players instead of bringing in, you know, stuff that make them think, oh, well, yeah, they need to get in the NFL because they need to make money because, you know, Don Dyer. It makes them feel like this is their only shot and chance to be successful in life.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. And they don't do that to the white players. They do not do that to the white players.
It's just sad. It's kind of like, okay, his mom struggled with drug addiction, but that does not mean that he's going to – I mean, we all have something, man. We all have something.
Yeah.
Dad may not have been in your life, your mom, this and that. But they don't do that, as you mentioned, to other players. And just to see that up there about – his mom dealt with that, you know. Because, I mean, you could say from the standpoint of he was a former drug dealer. He had come from an alcoholic family. He comes from a family.
Or a
history
single
of
family
womanizer.
Home.
He was
something
a
negative.
Numbers.
Something
dad
a stereotype.
Dad was a former numbers runner, weed smoker, trapezoid participant. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, something negative
dude,
to perpetuate the stereotype.
Yeah,
always
bad,
something
man,
to perpetuate the stereotype.
Particularly when this is a day of
celebration, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you something about the Notre Dame, the former Notre Dame coach. Remember, I think it was last year or when she won the championship, she made a point that women need to coach women's basketball.
Yes.
And that men should not be coaching women's basketball. Do you think she got a lot of heat behind that, and that is the reason why she had to go, or that she kind of quietly stepped away?
I think that might have had something, her being frustrated with it. I'm not sure. I don't think she had enough heat because she just won the national championship the year previously. And she's been mm-hmm. around a long time, and maybe she was frustrated by it, but I wouldn't say they ran her out. She's done too much for that program. To win two national championships on any level, particularly women's basketball, is unheard of. It's a lot of people that would never ever sniff that level. So I think she walked away on her own terms, and maybe she just had enough. She's been coaching a long time. She hasn't coached a long time. I was looking at something where I didn't even realize that I didn't realize that. Back in the day, I looked at her now, and I was like, oh, wow, when I was watching that documentary about the women of Troy with USC and Cheryl Miller, good friend of
mm-hmm.
mine, but Branson Wright was helped produce that, did not realize that Baylor coach was on one of those famous Louisiana Tech teams. Yeah, so you learn a lot from different things. You just see people in a certain light. So, yeah, but I don't think she was forced out. I think she probably just said, you know what, with all this going on, I want to spend time with my family, and I'm done.
Yeah. Okay. We got a few minutes left, about 10 minutes left, and so I have a question that you can respond to, and I can take one of your questions. And this was something earlier we talked about. NCAA football, they're talking about starting the season. I think the either football or basketball – or maybe even both, starting their season, the 2020 season, in 2021 in the spring. What are your thoughts on that?
Man, basketball, I think that'd be a rough one. because so much is going on. Football, maybe too, but I think it just depends. The fans are going to watch anyway, but I think mm-hmm. that it'll be different for them because you're talking about travel. The main thing, too, is people do a lot of traveling from the spring and the summer, and mm-hmm. people are going to have to adjust their schedules to, I mean, you do it, it'll probably be more or less for people to watch on TV, but to have people say that they're going to be there and in person, which they may not do anyway. Anything is possible for 1 year, but you have to be very careful because the spring is baseball and other things going on too. But I'm sure they have a plan, and they might shorten the season if they're going to do something like that. But I think it would be hard for college football to kind of walk away from the big time in the fall. That's their time. That is their time. If they do that and move it to the spring, I think you're going to watch the NFL clean up. Because you know they're playing.
I don't think it's a bad idea, especially if things kind of break from this pattern that we're in and they can get the crowds out there. I think it wouldn't be bad at all. It'd just be interesting because you're used to your football in the fall and basketball in the fall, and to have it in the spring. And it's kind of going to run into baseball and you know, it's going to run into so many other sports that we're used to seeing in the winter and the spring. So it would be interesting. I wouldn't say no to it. I would like to see how it will work. And who knows? We talked about the NFL draft in the first 40, and I kind of like the format where everybody can get involved. I do like the format where you can go to the NFL experience, but everybody doesn't get to go to the NFL experience, especially if it's in a particular city. So I kind of like the virtual kind of feel where people can get involved and get their face on the tube and feel like they're part of the show. And it got away from a lot of the pomp and circumstance of previous drafts. And, I kind of liked the way Roger Goodell kind of he seemed like he was more relaxed. He was more playful. He was even kind of teasing the folks that had the boo meter when New England had their pick, and they weren't cheering, they were booing. And so I kind of liked the feel of that. So we're going to have to change a lot of things after this is over with. So I wouldn't mind it. You got a question?
Yeah, I want to find out, do you think that how will games be held? How do you think things will go over for fans if fans are not able to watch games in person for football, basketball, and et cetera? If they have to have it where no fans are in the stands?
That depends. If these leagues make people pay for you to watch these games on television, there's going to be an uproar. I think they'll lose out on that. They have to start out with really kind of being fan-friendly, giving it access to folks so people can actually watch because we've been without it. I think it would be something different for folks. I think folks will do the tailgating at home. I don't know if they'll have access to get into the stadium, but they'll probably do something outside the stadiums or in parks if the parks are open. But it should be something different. It'll definitely be a different experience. I'm used to watching my sports at home. I'm comfortable at home. I have gone to sporting events, but I'm not as comfortable there as I am at home where I can go get my favorite beverage. I can have my food. I can take a nap. I can do pretty much what I want. I can go somewhere where the commercials are there. So I'm used to that. But there are a segment of folks who love the experience of being at the game. And I think they will have a difficult time making the adjustment. They shouldn't because, you know, that's how we all started out watching on TV. But some people love the game experience, whether it's the basketball, football, love being out there and love, being around people. And I think that's the hardest thing about this pandemic is that you miss the human touch. You're not around people. Unless you live with a bunch of people and you're quarantined together, you're not in connection with people during this. And how do we get back to that? Will we ever get back to that? Will we have different set of social rules when we get back from this? Because I know I'm thinking about it differently. Do we hug folks? Do we shake hands? I mean, a whole lot of things are going to change. So I think it will be a big adjustment if they decide, hey, no fans, you're just going to have to sit there and watch. And that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's going to be different. But in a way, it might be a good thing. I mean, I know that the tickets and stuff like that, they would have to get back refunds or something to that effect. But maybe we start watching stuff virtual. And they give people certain things mm-hmm. you just have to watch. And it makes maybe focusing. I mean, it's great to be watching the games, but maybe they give us a different alternative. The games are going to be more up-to-date and more exciting. Then the games are still going to be the games. But it will be interesting to see how they – I know they want the fans to be there, but we'll see how this plays out. I'm interested to see how it works out.
I think it's going to be they're going to have to, in order to track those fans, is to make the games more interactive with the fans. Just like they did with the draft, to make it interactive where folks are – it was almost like folks were at the draft. They were dressed up in their jerseys. They're going to have to kind of figure out a way to make it more interactive so people can get the same or simulate the experience of being at the game, whether it's fantasy football, all that other stuff. It's going to have to be make some innovative way to make that happen. You have a last-second shot?
Yeah, last-second shot is everyone, please stay safe, man. This virus is just no joke. The sad thing about this is that people want to be tested. They may have symptoms of this virus, and it's not happening. I know in Florida they're trying to start to open up for anybody that may feel like they have it. But anybody listening, for those that know and you feel symptoms or possible symptoms, find a way to get tested. Call your doctor. Because if you're not aware, this thing is no joke. It does not play. It's taking people down. And knowledge and education is the key to overcoming this type of virus.
Yeah. My last second shot is basically because Black and Ice would not let me talk about The Last Dance. I'm actually enjoying the documentary. I'm not a Bulls fan. I was a Michael Jordan fan until he got to the Bulls. I was a big North Carolina fan, enjoyed watching him there. But it's just interesting to hear the different perspectives from different people after these shows have aired about how they felt during that time. And it's very interesting to see how people remember history and how they remember things. And so I'm kind of enjoying the kind of side talking about some of the folks that were interviewed, some of the folks that talked about certain folks in the series, and it should be interesting. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it to watch it. It gives you a little history lesson and how the NBA used to be and how I wish the NBA still was. That's our show for tonight, and if you miss any part of the show, you can always come back, log right back here to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. And also check us out on YouTube on the First 40, the Goon Squad Sports YouTube channel. We will talk to you next week. Take care.